about on a quarter of the project surveyed. Clients were neither satisfied or dissatisfied. They were neutral. We believe that that is not good enough, but that amounts to something like 43 billion rands worth of work per year where clients are neutral. But there is a small percentage, on 1% of the projects, where clients were dissatisfied. And that translates to about 2 billion rands worth of work per year. And I need to just highlight, in terms of this dissatisfaction, as I'll show you in subsequent slides, the highest rate of dissatisfaction was in the housing sector, the residential sector. So these surveys cover residential, non-residential, and civil engineering, but the highest rate of dissatisfaction is in the non-residential sector. Another survey that we do is we ask clients, on the product that was delivered, the construction project, was it apparently defect-free? Were there few defects, some defects? Were there major defects, or was it totally defective? Totally defective, you typically cannot use the product. And we see that around 2% of the projects surveyed had major defects or were totally defective. And that amounts to about 3 billion rands worth of product per year, public sector spend. And again, the majority of the projects that were totally defective, not all, but the majority were in the residential sector. Now, this survey is not designed for the residential sector per se, but we did cover the home building sector as well. In terms of that report which we have distributed to you, we also did a questionnaire survey on what were the which sectors show the major problems in quality. And I think, as is well known, what came out of the survey, the areas where we get the most quality problems is in the low income sector and in the middle income residential building sector. That's where the biggest quality issues are being seen in the quality of construction. This survey also asked the question, what are the causes of poor quality? And I want to elaborate on that because it's going to come through several times in the presentation. And if one looks at the top three, what was in the questionnaires, the top three causes for poor quality, it was poor site management. The top three are very close. Poor site management. So that, excuse me, is an attribute associated with a contractor. Lack of contractor quality expertise. That is an attribute of the contractor, but it's also an attribute linked to the client, because it's a procurement process. One should procure from contractors who have the quality. And then the third one, and all three are higher, was the issue of corruption. Typically the question used corruption, nepotism, collusion, and the rest. But if one looks at this whole list, one can see the second one, lack of contractor quality expertise, lack of understanding of quality, inadequate information, detail even, focus on cost by contractors. Many of these are procurement issues. While at the end of the day, clearly the contractor delivers the product, but the client points the contractor, and the client, through the built environment professionals, manage the performance of the contractor. So we see a procurement issue coming through here continually. So we therefore, in that report, postulate that where we do see moderate quality problems, some defects, we postulate that this is largely due to design problems. Site may be inaccessible, some parts of the structure may be inaccessible, cannot be constructed properly. Or they're construction-related barriers, where the contractor may not have the full competencies or experience. Together with the client may not be monitoring the project. But where things we postulate go very wrong, where we see the major problems in quality, it is largely a procurement issue, where the client did not necessarily match the capabilities of the contractor to the requirements of the job, where the client did not take into account the performance of the contractor in awarding the contract, and in where the client may not have the capacity required in procurement, or there may be issues of corruption. So we believe that the major quality problems is linked to the procurement process. In other words, the identification and the appointment of the contractor. So I'd now like to just briefly now turn to what is the CIDB doing in terms of quality, and I'm going to talk from pretty much the structure of our programs at the CIDB. And the first one, the first program, is what we call the Construction Register Services. This is really the backbone of the CIDB. This is the one that maintains all the systems and all the information. We run a Register of Contractor, which was established in 2004, where we register contractors according to their financial capability, that is their annual turnover, the capital that they have access to, and also the largest project that they have undertaken. This Register of Contractors was the first register that we brought out, the first instrument that we regulated, and categorized contractors in terms of their financial standing, not in terms of their capabilities. It has always been the intent of the Act, and I'll come to it in the second bullet, that the client is accountable and responsible for risk management. We provide the tools to support that. So in the next phase, which we are currently at and we're busy finishing it off, is what is called the Best Practice Contractor Recognition Scheme. And here we are now rating or being able to identify the performance and capabilities of a contractor. And we will reflect this to clients so that they can make better informed decisions, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a subsequent slide. We are at the stage where we have finalized the first part of it. It is subject to regulatory impact assessment, and we could in fact roll this out this year depending on the regulatory impact assessment. We also maintain and run a registered project, and in terms of our Act, all government projects have to be registered with us. That registered project will be used to monitor the performance of a contractor, the agent, and the client. Again, we've got it to the stage where we are ready to roll it out. It is now subject to a regulatory impact assessment. So the second program that I want to talk to is a program called Procurement and Delivery Management, which focuses fundamentally on procurement issues, which, as I've highlighted, is core, we believe, to quality. We have the standard we have issued and published in the Gazette, and in fact it's been regulated, the standard for uniformity in construction procurement. It prescribes the manner in which construction projects must be called for, tendered for, and awarded. In terms of National Treasury regulations, construction procurement must comply with the prescripts of the CIDB. We also have a code of conduct for parties engaged in construction procurement, which cuts across all participants in the construction process and would also cover housing, in fact. That code of conduct talks about that non-performance, corruption, any other issues like that are a breach of the code of conduct. And the CIDB Act prescribes sanctions that can be applied, and the sanctions include anything from deregistration, downgrading, fines, and the like. So in terms then, to continue in terms of procurement and the focus on quality, the CIDB produces various practice guides called practice notes. These are not regulated. They are guides, but consideration is being given to how we could enforce them through Gazette notices, through regulations. It is emerging. But just to highlight some of them, Practice Note 9 provides guidance to clients on how to appoint contractors, how to evaluate the performance of contractors in terms of quality. The word quality here refers to quality in terms of the PPPFA functionality, but includes quality of construction. So we have a guide. The CIDB encourages that clients assess the performance of the contractor before awarding a contract to a contractor. We encourage that. The two-stage first process, which is catered for in terms of the PPPFA. We have recently produced Practice Note 30, entitled Blacklisting of Contractors for Non-Performance. At the moment, if a contractor or other supplier does not perform, in terms of Treasury regulations, one can go through a process and then list them on the Treasury database or list of non-performing suppliers. I've forgotten the exact title. We recommend that in construction one does not go that route, but sorry, restricted suppliers, that one does not go that route, but report any non-performing contractors. So that would include where a contractor does not build to the required quality specification and does not rectify and walks off site, that contractor is reported to the CIDB and we will investigate that contractor in terms of the code of conduct, and if appropriate, we could even blacklist the contractor from further participation in construction. We've also released practice note 31 this week, talking to requirements for registered professionals or built environment professionals, and how we recommend that a client at tender notice stage should require the name of the registered built environment professional from the contractor who will manage that construction project. So that's either SACP CMP registered professional, construction manager, or Engineering Council of South Africa, PR Tech registered person. The CRDB, together with National Treasury, spends a lot of effort on building capacity of government officials, primarily at the national and provincial level, but extending it now down to the local level. And we have developed in draft what we call an integrity management system to encourage more transparent procurement, addressing the issues of potential corruption. Turning to the program, Construction Industry Performance, this is where we're actually developing the best practice contractor recognition scheme. We have published in the Government Gazette a standard for contractor performance reports where once mandated through regulation on all government projects, it will be a requirement that the client completes an evaluation of the contractor, including an evaluation of the quality of construction. That will be retained by the CIDB. We have, together with the South African Bureau of Standards, developed a specific construction management system integrated for health and safety, quality and environment, which focuses on the mid-level contractors. We have developed with industry competence standards for contractors. What should the competence be of a contractor? We are developing integrity management systems. So how could clients identify contractors who have systems in place to prevent corruption, collusion, whatever the case may be? All of the above, as I've already highlighted, is subject to this regulatory impact assessment. Subject to that assessment, which we believe will be completed within a month or so, we could roll this scheme out in this year, which will then provide additional information to clients on the performance of contractors, which will then help clients better match the requirements of the job with the contractor's capability. We are also developing what is called the Best Practice Project Assessment Scheme. We have published the standard in the Government Gazette for indirect targeting for enterprise development, where large contractors will support the training of emerging contractors, and that training includes focuses, amongst others, on quality. We are busy developing, and we will go to pilot stage very shortly, a register of professional service providers where clients will be able to identify the better performing service provider, looking at their competence, their track record and the like. And we are looking, we have finished a report, and we are looking at piloting and testing the Building and Construction Authority, BCA, apologies for the acronym there, of Singapore. We have developed the Construction Quality Assessment Scheme, CONCOS. That scheme has been used very successfully in Singapore and other countries to drive up quality, where you go into a finished product and you test the quality and you get a score. In Singapore, one gets a financial rebate and the like. That scheme was tested at the CSR several years ago and was used by the NHBRC to inform the development of some of the assurance schemes at the moment. So then lastly, from the program perspective, we have a program called Provincial Offices and Contractor Development. Together with the Department of Public Works, the CIDB manages or runs the National Contractor Development Program, where we've set the framework for contractor development in South Africa, contractor development programs. That framework for contractor development was endorsed by MINMEC in September 2012 and has been endorsed by COCTA MINMEC in September 2013. So that sets the framework on how contractor development should be done. The CIDB has developed guidelines for implementing contractor development programs. These guidelines talk to providing work opportunities to emerging contractors, training opportunities, including training in construction management quality and the like, mentoring. It talks about how contractors graduate with recognized competencies. It is critical, we believe, that contractor development programs comply with these guidelines. We are monitoring the contractor development programs and we're working very closely with various government officials and practitioners in building capacity. Chair, in conclusion, the CRDB is collaborating with National Treasury on building procurement capacity in national and provincial departments and beginning to cascade it down to metropolitan. We believe that the CRDB and NHBRC should consider encouraging clients to require CRDB registered contractors in home building. That will necessitate a change to our act. But we believe that there is value in allowing the client to prescribe CRDB registration, which will then allow for contractor performance reports, competence evaluation and the like. The CRDB undertakes to collaborate with the NHBRC to share knowledge and systems in the area of quality improvement. We both have significant expertise, I believe. We need to work together and share, and we do communicate and collaborate quite regularly. The CRDB is collaborating with built environment professionals to enhance the focus on contractor development, amongst others, and specifically the CRDB is collaborating with the South African Council for Construction Project Managers, SACPCMP, in establishing the necessary mentoring capacity for contractors. So the CRDB has a wide range of focus on quality, albeit that its mandate does not include the housing sector, but the industry in general. And we undertake and we will continue to work with NHBRC and other relevant bodies such as the Council for the Built Environment, Agrimas South Africa and the like. And Chair, in conclusion, we are building a strong, together we can all build a strong government focus on quality and contractor development. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additions?
Thank you, Chairperson. That is the presentation that we had prepared for you and your honorable members. In this regard, I think I would like just to highlight a few areas that came out of the presentation. First of all is the area where we have actually tried to go back and look at the source of all the problems associated with quality. And we have singled out the procurement process as a gap. Procurement process whereby the specifications are put together, the contractor is actually sourced to do the work and awarded the work to do. Further than that, the implementation according to spec or specification that is not being monitored, as well as the conclusion of the contract by the various contractors as the overall procurement weakness that we have identified in this regard. CIDB has evolved over years, and as such, we have collected enough institutional knowledge to be able to deal with most of the areas. But I think where we need to go in now is to actually take the standards as well as the practice notes, the discussion documents, which are a guide into a regulatory framework where they actually begin now to be regulatory and be enforced as such. Some of the documents that we have are actually used by national, provincial, as well as municipalities to guide in procurement processes. But we need more enforcement in CIDB, and we've identified this as part where we need to escalate and transit to as the institution.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the presentation, but before we continue, honourable members, I wanted to note some few apologies. The one is from Uma Gadla, who also sharing, whom some of our committees are clashing. And also I do have other two apologies. One is from Mr. Onel Dipier, who is still in hospital. Official, both chairpersons were sharing some members. I think we must do something, because we never think about anything about to honor member Onel. He's still in hospital. So it's now, I think it's quite a long time in hospital. Then also, honored member, first man. Yes, Yenang is declared by a doctor, is that is ill. Then also, sorry, honored member, my picture is still on her way. These are few apologies. But nevertheless, honorable members, these were the presentation from the people whom we've requested, whom we were struggling to get to come here. And I'll request members to start to interact with the presentation. Honorable Member Temba, followed by Honorable Mlenzane, followed by Honorable Member Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank Mr. Moffat for the information that he has shared with us in this presentation. I'm not sure how you deal with the provinces, because this information, Chair, it doesn't give us, you know, information of what had happened in provinces. For example, on slide number 8, any contractor who is registered as a home builder is exempt from registration in terms of these regulations for the purpose of construction works in relation to the provision of a home as contemplated in this regulation. If maybe there are those who has like registered, maybe how do you monitor such, what mechanisms have you put in place to make sure that this doesn't happen? If you can elaborate on this. Then on slide 16, I want to know, before all these barriers, what do you do in provinces? Do you train? Have you got programs to make sure? Because here we're talking of the people who were disadvantaged and are still disadvantaged. How do you make sure? Because definitely they are really willing to be part of the CDIB. How do you make sure that these people are trained? And I think I will align that with slide number 19. That how do you, as the department, assist, especially in the rural areas, making sure that these people, the community, they acquire the skills so that they do the right thing. And given the extent of corruption within government, the infrastructure sector, how many contractors have you blacklisted as the department? How many? If there is. But if there's none, maybe you can tell us the reason, what you are doing to make sure that there is nil. And lastly, still on training, I think slide number 22. Training of emerging contractors. If you can tell us per province, you know, this is the way you have presented to us. It's not for these people seated here because we really represent provinces. The information that we would like to hear, I would actually like to hear what are you doing in Mpumalanga, for example. Let's say not only Mpumalanga, we represent different provinces here, but just making an example of province that I come from, Mpumalanga. Hazyview, Emazambani, in Hertzibande, Nkomazi. That's the information, and say, I think you should have actually guided them that the Select Committee on Public Service that you are going to, it's the Select Committee that has got the interest of provinces at heart. They would like to get information of what is really happening in the deep rural areas where they come from, where they represent. So, on slide 23, this program, the provincial offices and contractor development, how far have you dealt with, have you done, and the areas that you have gone, are the communities being informed? If they are being informed, because you talking of the government gazette, whatever, but you've got many languages in these areas, how do you make sure that the people who were previously disadvantaged are really getting this information and they are understanding? And after you have done these programs, do you really go back to these people, to these contractors, emerging contractors, and see whether what you have like maybe trained them on, are they? You understand. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, my fellow member, Mlenzane.
thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have the same question but put differently to one which Honorable Temba raised. Chairperson, if my memory serves me well, perhaps the Secretary would remind me. There was once information that we sought from CIDB and were given. I'm sure Chairperson would remember a slide which was projected there, which was indicating the actual levels of our previously disadvantaged or emerging contractors in terms of the CIDB levels. I'm sure you remember that, DDG, some time back, where it was clearly indicating the province, and it was very clear, Chairperson, in that slide, that we are not doing good as we move up to level 6. I'm sure you remember that. And we gave a mandate, a clear mandate to CIDP that, look, go back, see how best to deal with this in terms of, as Mama Temba is saying, robust training. Because we were also, you know, mindful of the fact that nobody must just jump the queue and be quickly elevated without thorough training and knowledge and understanding. And it would link, if you remember, then you would say to us, your grading includes even your financial capacity, that perhaps some are kept at that low level because of their financial muscle. They are unable to take up big chunks of you know, projects because they would have to first go seek some financial assessment, assistance. So then it goes back to what Mama Temba is asking. How far are you then with that program, particularly this one of the robust development and training of such? Without being racist, if this information that we need could reflect on the demographics, because here we are talking equity, and to me, Chairperson, that we are talking equity cut across. Let's not only fight with the Department of Labor when we are talking employment equity. Because perhaps even here, you may find that the more in the upper levels would be the then contractors who one could say are now aging. What is it that CIDP has done? Let's take it just for this 5 years, Chairperson, in terms of that robust development. And then the second, which would be the last question for me, Chairperson, is, I maybe DDG, you are talking quality assurance and all, and saying you are happy with the feedback that at least the work that is currently being done is quality work. But then one would ask, because once more, the last report that we received from CIDP was the acute shortage of trained artisans and the first level supervisor staff. Now, if one could be briefed as to what is it that you have done to address such acute shortage, because I would agree with you that there is demand for quality control, standard of operation procedures and all. So how then are you dealing with that? Because you cannot, Chairperson, begin to guarantee quality assurance whilst you do not have your foot soldiers to go there and see to it that in reality you do have quality. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honourable Member Groenewald, Mama of Notetu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Yeah, it seems to me the most of the questions is basically the same questions. Our worrying is about the same things happened in the department. I also want to know who control and monitor performance and best practice in the provinces as well as in the municipalities, and where are your offices in the provinces? It did not help if you had an office in Pretoria and that's the only office. I want to know, what are you doing on the ground where things happen? The proof in the pudding is what happened practically on the ground. So that is what I want to know. And how many offices or people do you have to monitor the projects all over South Africa? It doesn't help we have one or two, it will not work. What measures are you used for quality performance? So if we talk about a lot of time about quality performance, but I want to know, what is the measures you used? They can build a house now, tomorrow it's cracked, and then you are already gone. So what, there must be some measures you can test the quality of buildings and that they will remain for 10 or 15 years. We see all over South Africa that most of these houses in a couple of months, 6 or 12 months, it start cracking and there's a lot of problems in the houses. And you've got, you show us that people are satisfied. Many people are satisfied in your presentation. But after a couple of months, are that same people still satisfied? That is what I want to know. We can't build houses and it is only for 6 or 12 months. It must at least help for 10, 15, 20 years for the people. How long after, and that is my question, how long after completion of the project people are satisfied, and when are after the surveying was the survey was taking place, and for how long are people satisfied regarding their houses? The time and the houses are that's two different questions. And then I want to make an example here, and that is of Kutsong in Gauteng. I was sitting in the municipality on that committee when they took a decision to build the houses in a specific area. And I asked the question, but there's dolomite in that area and there's dolomite here in Kutsong, and now you build the houses in the middle, in the open space. There must be also dolomite. And now they start build houses there. It is 16,000 houses. They start building there. And there's already holes in the ground around that houses. Now, what type of influence do you have on such a big project? That is one of the biggest projects in South Africa. And now we start getting problems there. So, the dolomite is there as well. How do you prepare before time? Before you start doing, they bore holes, you can tell me now, they bore holes, I know it. But I don't think that was enough. Then the registration of contractors, the monitoring of it and the skills, do they have skills or not? It seems, I've got the feeling, you are just looking for contractors to register to your department, and then it's fine. If they have skills or they do not have skills, how do you monitor if they have the necessary skills to take on a project? I'm worried about that as well. And then we talk a lot of it is training, the programs, when, where, and how many people are trained, and especially in the rural areas. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mama Temba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to align this one with the one that the Honourable Member Groenewald has just asked, to say how many women in this field, how many women and how many, you know, youth in per province, every information that we would like to have is per province. And where they don't reach the requirements, what do you do? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, but I would also try to join my colleagues to maybe seek for clarity for a few things which I've noted. You see, your presentation is, I can say it's very good, but the reality is practical. How do you take it practical? My worry, Secretary, in future, if we request CIDP to come here, we must also get members of the NHBRC to come. Because I know there is this thing of hiring sick, the back is referred to if anybody is not here, this is referred to this one and this is referred to this one. And also what is worrying me all the things which were raised by my colleagues are concerning the people on the ground, in particular like us which were working in the different provinces. But nevertheless, myself, I'll do this. Number one, I was checking when you were addressing. You were saying, yeah, on slide number five. Colleagues, I think our question, Honorable Runewald, was correct. And all those of you were correct, that would be very close to each other as our concern. On slide number five, or page five, you said it's to promote, I mean, in terms of your mandate, to promote sustainable growth and participation of emerging sectors. And on slide number 19, to me it's one and the same. By construction register service, you said CIDP register of constructors, and also you spoke about financial capability and established whatever what you said. You see, I'm still coming to the question, the relevant question on this one. And then I think it's Honorable Lenza or Mamtem, if I'm not mistaken. I think Mamtem spoke about slide number 22. When we spoke about best practice. You see, about under a best practice register of professional services providers under development. Make it one. Honorable members, I do have a practical example. I don't know whether this belongs to you or it belongs to NHBRC, whereby I was approaching my constituency by a certain gentleman who's a bricklayer. He has built a lot of, was involved in a lot of projects, including building a police station locally. And I'm worried, because most of the time we appeal in all spheres that help us to take us on board so that we can utilize even constituency offices to teach these people. But that never happened. This person has been arrested and the charge is not clear. I'll circulate to you. And they are saying in terms of national housing, what. He didn't comply in terms of registration. So it boils back to the very same question, that how do you make sure, how do you make people, how do you mobilize people to go and register? Do you have any program to do that? Or just the strict presentation you gave us? Because now I must respond to this particular person. He's arrested as I'm talking to you. And the case was postponed yesterday for non-compliance in terms of registration. Who is responsible for this? It's you or who? And if you are responsible, how then do you take local people on board? I'll circulate from you to you. And then you said somewhere, constructors are sourced. Tell you, sourced. How do you source them? Because our concern is one. It's about the most of the time we talk about the people who have never been helped so far. And here it seems to me like a thing from the people who you are referring for the people who are most advantaged. the people who were being at disadvantage, that continue to be disadvantaged. May you take us on board in our programs, how to involve other people, but our security. And I request, I would recommend this thing must be attended to. These people must be helped. Because I think it's not their fault. It is your fault. Time and again, what, making new laws and the like, but we don't take people on board. And then also, while many of the larger contractors are implementing programs to address their skills requirement, smaller contractors, in particular new entries, generally do not have resources necessary to address these quality factors. And I think to us, maybe to talk to you to consider having public and private sector intervention to facilitate school developments. Or else, what else do you have in order to advance in that regard? Because it's, to me it seems there is a problem. It's like you're having a good plan, but it's not implemented. And then also, the CIDB Best Practice Contractor Recognition Scheme was due to be phased in, from 2011 to 2012. Has it been successfully been implemented? I'm just asking a question. Has it been implemented? If not, what are the impact on quality? I mean, if so, if it is implemented, what is the what is its impact on quality and construction? These are some of the questions which we wanted you to assist us with. But nevertheless, I'll come back later on with other questions as well, so only to give you an opportunity. Over to you.
No, thanks, Chief.
Sorry, Claudine.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, I first want to address the aspect of the advice I should have given to the CIDB in preparing his presentation. Chair,
come closer to
a microphone. All right, Chair. It is said when you accept representing responsibilities, you don't only accept the assets of it, you also accept its liabilities. I will accept the liabilities for the lack of guidance, but I would like to register with the committee that this is not my portfolio. I'm responsible for projects within the department, and I was asked to assist since there was a clash. But I will accept that criticism of the department not providing that adequate advice in terms of focusing the presentation. And we will endeavor to make sure we provide all the required other detailed information that's required with respect from a provincial perspective. But Chair, I've listened to the nature of the questions that are being asked. And I think it's important for me to explain to the committee what is the role of the CIDB, what kind of a player it is in the sector, what does it do, what it does not do. But I think it's very important so that we know we hold them accountable for what they are responsible for, and we identify the other players who are responsible for other responsibilities. Chair,
sorry, before you continue, you see, when we deal with this committee, we used to advise a lot of people that they must be careful about teaching us about the role of and your role as well. Because you start another thing, you fuel more fire. Because what I'll suggest that you focus today the questions which we have asked you. Because ourselves were very clear, let me clarify you something. Why don't you ask yourself why we requested the office of maybe the lady from the Auditor General to come here? Must ask yourself why we have requested that. Because we know very well about your mandate. It's not about issuing money only. We also wanted quality. We need a lot of things involved, the combination. Therefore, I'll request you to focus on the questions. Because once you start to deviate to tell the role and the like, we'll accept it. We don't have any problem. But it's up to you. The ball is in your court.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, it was not meant in any fashion whatsoever to be disrespectful or try to attempt to educate the committee. But I think it's incumbent on me, and it's my responsibility having to explain what it is that the CIDB can do or not do. And I'm not being disrespectful in any fashion whatsoever. The distinction, Chair, I'd just like to put as a context is that the CIDB is not an implementing agent. The CIDB is a regulatory body that must do monitoring and evaluation of an industry. And what is telling the most are the adjectives of the mandates, if you look into in terms of its acts. It asks it to do particular things in terms of promoting, etc., etc. And Chair, if you allow me, in the same vein, if you start to look at an organization like the Auditor General, or the lady that's representing the Auditor General sitting across, the functions of the CIDB are not that far off from the functions of the AG in terms of what it needs to do in terms of monitoring and to recommend what needs to be done as a change and where it has powers to issue instructions to that effect that allow the implementing agents to do improvements so that things are improved. But that being said, Chair, I will hand over to the CIDB to answer some of the specific questions. But I think I needed to provide that
Sorry,
particular
point. Before that, I've noticed the hand of Honourable Temba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I raised my hand to say, can the gentleman let the CIDB respond to the questions that were put forward to them on the presentation that were put to us? Because they have wrote down the presentation. And I think every time when we are with this the gentleman, he will try to educate us first before we get the responses. It's not the first time. But we understand. Can we get the responses? Chair, thanks.
Okay. Sorry, before we continue, you see what, as I indicated, that this committee must be seen small, but once you try it, it's your own baby. For an example, before we start, you failed to comply on what we requested on all entities as well as the department. We requested you touch it, Babu Mlenzan, the issue of the gender. We're not compromising about the issue of the gender. Instead of requesting the issue of the gender, you send us a Congress of Boys Only, COBO. And we take it serious. I wonder in your office whether you have females or just males only. We didn't want her to go to that one. We just giving you a lighter note that please try and address this thing, but not a lecture. Because even yourself, you fail to comply. To us, you are not complying. It's not a secret. We talk about gender. If you come here to present to us, you must make sure that your delegation is balanced. The delegation is not balanced. You are not complying as well. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We note your guidance with respect to representativity. When we come before this committee. Thank you very much. Also, I should point out that the concerns of the select committee are valid. And also, in the context of housing development, I think we have all witnessed what has actually happened with houses being demolished, with huge amounts of money being spent in terms of repairing and maintenance of such houses. But in this respect, Chair, again, the CIDB itself is all-encompassing in terms of the construction industry. But again, there is another body that is specific to housing development, which is NHBRC. And I echo your sentiments that we need a single sitting of both entities so that we understand what NHBRC is saying and what CIDP is saying, so that the clear distinction can be seen by your committee, and also your committee can ask the relevant questions to a relevant body specifically, so that we cannot play one against the other in terms of these two bodies. I will try to just zoom in some of the questions that came through. The presence of CIDB in provinces is a very major issue in terms of NCOP structure. We do have offices in all 9 provinces, and we work with our mother organization, with our mother department, Department of Public Works. They have actually set up our offices in their premises in 8 of the provinces. And in one where they couldn't, which is only Mpumalanga, where they couldn't provide us with office space in their premises, they're actually renting offices for CIDB to exist in their province as the Department of Public Works. And this is only the case only in Mpumalanga. Otherwise, all other provinces, we have presence. Over and above the provincial offices, Chairperson, geographically, some of the provinces are very wide. People have to travel. For instance, if you look at Eastern Cape, from Zimkulu, which is near Durban, to come and register in Bisho in the provincial office. We're now exploring possibilities of having satellite presence that are closer to some of the areas that are vast in terms of geographic location. And provide the menu of services that we provide in the provinces, in these satellite offices as well. In terms of the assistance that CIDB, or the work that CIDB does in provinces, we work very close with national department, with provincial departments, over and above working with national departments. Also, we're working very close with municipalities in terms of making sure that our framework in terms of procurement and these best practices which we're talking about are actually mainstreamed in the procurement processes and in the process of doing work in those departments, so as to raise the bar and ensure that at the end, quality that we're discussing today is ensured. And maybe I should have apologized with the DDG upfront, Chair, to say we made our presentation focused very much on quality and ignored the other aspects which are coming out now in the question and answer session. And I think the mandate that we were given was very explicit in terms of quality, but perhaps we should have looked wider in terms of covering all aspects of CIDB. I know my colleague Rodney has got a presentation with him that shows the representation of women, youth, as well as race in terms of our grading at CIDB, and how this graph has actually moved up and down over the years, reflecting progress that has taken place. But we didn't include it in this presentation because of the brief, again, Chairperson. But we would like to touch briefly on some of these areas. And if we have to, or we can be afforded an opportunity to make these statistics available to the committee to actually go through on its own, we will oblige, Chairperson. I think in this regard also we do have programs that are targeted at school-going children, particularly those that are at high school, to make sure that they are sensitized about the existence of the construction industry. And construction industry is not just about laying bricks and mixing concrete, and make it more attractive for professionals to enter, especially the previously disadvantaged areas. We also have provincial stakeholder liaison meetings that call on all our stakeholders. In some areas, we also have councillors and members of parliament coming to those provincial stakeholder liaison meeting, where they give input and they also voice out some of the frustrations that are coming out, particularly from the emerging sector of contractors. And we also have a national stakeholder forum where nationally contractor bodies, professionals, politicians, business and so on actually converge and actually come in and have a voice at a national level in this regard. I think, Chair, I just wanted to cover those areas, and I will allow my colleague also to add on specific details to some of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and I apologize that, as my CEO said, we did not structure the presentation for that. I want to give a little bit of a snapshot of some of the information we have. I want to refer to what I think was that graph, that slide that you referred to earlier, and possibly if you've been given an opportunity to come back and present in more detail, but we'll certainly send you some of that. Now, I apologize, this is not a formal presentation. I want to try and draw, if I can get it up and running. This is not a formal presentation, so I'm going to try and extract from various. Firstly, with regard to the provincial statistics, we do produce every quarter what we produce, a quarterly monitor, and we will print out copies and have them distributed to you, where we look at a whole range of statistics. We look at the number of contractors, the number of black contractors, the number of women-owned contractors, and the like, and we look at it primarily at a national level and the four major economic provinces. But we do have the statistics for every province. I don't necessarily want to go into the detail here, and I'm going to try and address a few points and then see if I've covered most of the issues. So we do have that information, and I believe it's very important and useful information because it provides, we believe, guidance on how to target interventions, which I want to come back to. If I jump to here, a presentation that we made on behalf of the Minister of Public Works and this gets to the point that the member from Eastern Cape raised, on behalf of the Minister of Public Works in 2012, we held a summit on transformation in the construction industry. And this here shows where we've grouped the number of CIDB registered contractors, excluding grade ones, but we've grouped them into grades 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6, 7, 8 and 9. This slide only talks to general building, which is in brown, and civil engineering, and we get this pyramid, which is common throughout the world. And grade ones, you've probably got about 100,000 contractors. The significant point, which I think was stressed here, is if you look at black ownership, this is 2 years ago, it's changed slightly, but the trend has not changed, is that transformation, if you measure transformation in terms of black ownership, transformation and drops off rapidly with increasing size of enterprise. The grade nines are publicly listed companies, so we can't necessarily determine the ownership, but the trend is very clear. Transformation is not progressing to the rate that we desire at the higher grades in particular. That was general building. If one looks here, this is women-owned, for argument's sake, 50%, and we've got youth-owned. I apologize, I don't have the youth-owned, I do have the women-owned. And this shows general building, GB, civil engineering, CE, ME, mechanical, EBs, electrical buildings, electrical power and special works. And we see that whereas transformation tends to be progressing, not at a satisfactory pace in building and civil, in this other speciality areas, it is lagging hugely. This is the, amongst others, is the alarming figures. This is the one that you referred to. It shows you the top blue line is black ownership over the past 3 years in grades 2 to 4, and this is civil engineering, it's 90% plus black owned, those companies. When you get to the larger ones, grades 7 and 8, we're currently seeing that they're around about 50% black owned. The key here is the rate of change. And I'm a simple person, if I want to know what's going to happen in 20 years' time, I just extrapolate using these figures, and we can see The pace of transformation is not acceptable. And this is something that my CEO will refer to often and often. The CIDB has a fundamental role with Department of Public Works, with CBE, with a whole range of bodies, and in fact, getting down to the skills organizations, the challenge to transform. What we do have, which I've not shown here, but I've highlighted, we do, and in fact, yesterday we were up in the Northwest, and where we have all of these graphs broken down per province. And we can make these available. This is Gauteng province shows black ownership in KZN for argument's sake, Mpumalanga black ownership, Eastern Cape black ownership, and then we've also got women ownership at all of these. We must make these available to you. The point is, I believe, is what does one do with the information? Now, the CEO spoke about we have these provincial offices, we have provincial stakeholder liaison meetings, of which we're currently in progress with. But in the provinces, every quarter, we also have what we call provincial construction development forums, where we meet with contractors, clients, and the rest of it to look at furthering contractor development and construction issues. And we also have quarterly procurement officer forums in the provinces. And this is where these graphs start playing a more significant role, because the nuances in some provinces are different to the nuances in other provinces. I need to stress on page 23 of the presentation, we spoke about the NCDP, the National Contractor Development Program, the framework. I have the graph here in one of these presentations, but I'm not going to put it up. We are currently monitoring contractor development programs in 23 client bodies in provinces all across. The point, we are monitoring to see whether the contractor development programs are being successful, whether they're achieving the desired impact and the rest. We encourage, we stress the need that we have to grow the number of contractor development programs. Say, what are we doing for historically disadvantaged? This is one of the mechanisms, not the only mechanism. We're monitoring 24 programs. There shouldn't be 24 programs. We should be allocating. Every single provincial body, every single local authority body should have a contractor development program, and that's what we are advocating. And that's why in that slide it went to COCTA, Salga and COCTA, in September 2013. COCTA has supported that these get rolled out, but rolled out properly and correctly into every local authority structure. If government allocates 10% of its procurement budget, and I'm not talking housing, I'm talking in general, if government allocates, as we recommend in our guidelines, 10% of their procurement budget into contractor development programs with training, with mentoring, that will equate to something like 3.5 billion rands worth of developmental opportunities for emerging contractors per year. Now that's focused in grades 2 to 6. So we encourage the growth of these. We have quarterly meetings throughout the provinces. We interact at MINMEC, we interact at COCTA and the rest to try and encourage this. If I can try and jump around, I'm talking a high level, I'll come to some of the issues. What are we doing around skills? One which I did not mention here is that we've produced a standard for the development of skills on construction works projects. Once regulated, and we hope to regulate it later on this year, a document will be presented at MINMEC in March, which will lead to possibly the regulation. It will be a requirement on all government jobs that training opportunities are given to artisans, learners, and professionals. This will create over 3,000 learning opportunities per year. The CIDB is presently establishing what we call a Skills Development Agency, SDA, where we will rotate those learners between the various projects. Those projects, those learners, will have to be representative of the provinces and representative of spend around there. So that is a structure we believe that will support artisan training, learnership training throughout the country. On every government project, it will be mandated that 10%, the rough number is 10% of the labor force is spent on development, on training. So that is what we are busy setting up. So in terms of, if I can just see, then I'll get down to some specifics. I've tried to elaborate, in addition to what the CEO said is the provincial structure, we do have the graphs. These graphs are provincially, these graphs are presented at these provincial meetings. We have regular meetings, but we're probably not communicating enough, and that I accept we need to enhance our communication. The key is to interpret it. Where do we need additional capacity? What type of additional capacity do we need? Transformation underpins everything that we do at the CRDB. It is a long challenge. We are working with a task team under the Minister of Public Works to put various steps in place to see that we can do it. One of the biggest, you know, at the Transformation Summit, we said, what is possibly blocking transformation in the contracting industry, not necessarily the built environment? We've got information, but if I just talk contracting, skills, fundamental issue, but also lack of access to work. Currently, municipalities are returning, I think it's 16 billion rands worth of unspent capital works per year. 16 billion rand of unspent equipment is a huge impact on skill development, on employment, and on transformation. We monitor that in this document as well. So we're doing various things. So I've covered skills, I think I've covered contractor development programs, and some of the more specific issues, if I can possibly get to Northwest questions around the Dolomite and those issues, that is primarily a housing issue. That there should be fall under the National Building Regulations, where they have a specific clause on Dolomite construction. It falls specifically under the inspectorate, or the NHBRC inspectorate, who's supposed to go around and inspect these issues. It refers specifically to planning permission. The CRDB does not have an inspectorate. We're not involved in quality assurance. We do not have an inspectorate. But notwithstanding that, we do have a potential business plan looking at possibly setting up an inspectorate, not to inspect quality, but to inspect whether these best practices are rolled out properly and applied properly. And we do have a business plan which will be coming to fruition. I'm not sure if I've answered the details. I'm not sure if you want to add anything.
Chair, there's a document which you said you're in possession of, which we would really be interested to have a look at, because we both, with National Building, National Home Builders Registration Regulators, so I cannot make a call now as to, but we would like to get a copy and see which institution really was handling the inquiry which you have attended.
Honourable members, this will respond. Including this person, but before I give it to the members again, you know, remember sometimes people, if they visit Parliament, they're making their own, they're killing themselves. You know, I indicated that I ask you to any addition after the presentation. You said none. Give it to them this one. Give it to them. And as you are explaining, that's what we want. That's what we wanted. And I don't think it's a crime when you started to put it there. And yeah, that is it. Honourable members, I don't know where to start. Do you have some follow-up questions, as I indicated earlier on that? If there's any, give them opportunity to make some follow-up questions. Mama Temba.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I don't have any follow-ups, but to request the information that they've just given to us to be forwarded to you through to the secretary through you, so that we have that information, because definitely that's the information that we were looking for, and I would like to thank you for that.
Any additional members? But before that, there was a question which I've raised which was never been answered to, about the issue of the CIDB, a best practice contracts and recognition scheme, which was to be phased in. You never responded, but I'll add one as well. That if you can maybe elaborate about if there are any, are there any measures planned to deal with the institutional barriers? Such as poor skills and lack of competence of those involved in construction procurement. And then second question, are there any system in place to monitor, that's a key one, to monitor and evaluate the rollout of CIDB requirements for human resources management plan, which is scheduled for completion for this financial year, 2013-2014. If you can maybe clarify, so those two.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I can, apologies for not responding to one. The phasing in and the rollout of the best practice schemes, there are two of them. It is behind schedule, but as illustrated in this presentation, subject to the regulatory impact assessment, we hope to roll it out this year. They are basically, fundamentally, the building blocks in places. In many cases, the components have been gazetted, but are not regulated or implemented, subject to that regulatory impact assessment, which hopefully will be done this year. The question which I interpret you raising around skills, what are we doing around skills, if I interpret correctly, procurement officials. We are establishing competence standards for construction procurement officials. We have established a training course at this stage with the University of Pretoria, but it will be cascaded out broader than that, and around, I think the number is 40 officials have been trained in this training material to this competence standard. Whether it becomes a requirement that all construction procurement officials must achieve the standard, must be accredited to the standard, is a discussion we will have with the Department of Public Works. But we are certainly promoting that all construction procurement officials attain this NQF level competence which we have developed. Monitoring of human resource development, amongst others, we will be monitoring this through the Best Practice Project Assessment Scheme. It will be monitored through the SDA, the Skills Development Agency. Any learner that participates in training will be monitored through us. And we have also established what we call an oversight committee, drawn from stakeholders, representative stakeholders in industry who are independent of the board, but will report to the board on the effectiveness of these schemes, including the effectiveness of how we are addressing construction skills. I hope that answers your question, and if you want to add to that.
Right. Other members, do you have any?
No.
Okay. Fine. What am I going to do now? I have some recommendations, but I feel that I must need to take them out now. And,
I have some recommendations. I'll repeat what I've said. I do have some recommendations, so Fisher, I feel that I mustn't take them out now. But nevertheless, with the committee or the management, I would suggest that, I don't know when, because for this term, our program is very, very pregnant, very, very busy. If we had a chance, I was going to suggest that we call them again. And I was going to suggest that we call them, we call as well as the department, because the issue, the key fundamental challenge which I've realized now is that who's who, who is responsible on what and where. Because I'll put an example, our key fundamental challenge is about in monitoring and evaluation. Who's monitoring this? Who's evaluating this? Who is implementing this? And the bug is being shifted to this. And also...
Chair, I think we'll be collapsing here. The heat here is too much. I don't know who can assist us.
Okay, fine. Claudine? Can you please get these people who are controlling?
That is the off. That's what she's off.
But there's a problem in the building right now, so they're working on it.
Oh, I promise with the building. I opened the door, please. I'm sorry to all members and to all people who are here. Yes, I was just saying that the proper way, because we still do have a lot of questions. PLO, you know, with you I was going to ask that, well, who is the DDG, who is responsible in monitoring and liaising with the CIDP? You know why? It's because we have linked with you then we've indicated that we're expecting this and this and this and this and this and this. And we mean it. To any people whom we are requesting here, the people mustn't forget that we are having a lot of different programs, like taking parliament to the people. That's where some of the things are coming. Some of the things are coming as well from our constituency offices. Some of the people are coming from public hearings, etc., etc. Some of the people, things are coming from the provinces as provinces. So if we ask anything, mean it. But nevertheless, I would suggest that next, if there is any time, we'll call the CIDP again, but with other people and some, because there are a lot of, things which we were not clarified with, hoping that if we're together, this thing can be maybe clarified better. But nevertheless, I will suggest that we adjourn the meeting, but requesting members to remain behind to make 1, 2, 3. Thank you very much for coming.
Yes, I'm sorry. 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 Yes,